Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I am the Community Engagement Coordinator at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, fire keepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I would now like to introduce this morning's panel, Jen Tift, Liza Semide, and Caitlin Moriarty. Jen Tift is the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Neighborhood and Business Development in the City of Syracuse. Jen directs programs and strategic initiatives that support and enhance business and economic development, neighborhood revitalization, and inclusive growth throughout the City of Syracuse. Jen's areas of expertise include program design, management, and communications to implement large transformational initiatives. Jen's experiences also include market analysis and strategic planning, project funding, and design of public-private partnerships. Prior to her role in the City of Syracuse, Jen was a leader in the government and public services practice at Deloitte Consulting, where she focused on helping government and non-for-profit organizations design new programs, improve customer experience, and implement innovative solutions, including smart cities initiatives. Jen holds a Master of Public Administration degree from the Maxwell School at Syracuse University, a Juris Doctorate from Syracuse University College of Law, and Bachelor of Arts from Loyola University, Chicago. Liza Semide works as the Syracuse Surge Workforce Manager at Center State CEO. Her work includes the Economic Inclusion Portfolio Work Train Program. Before joining Center State CEO, she worked at SpinCar as Senior Advertising Technology Manager. A native of Florida, Semide earned her bachelor's degree from Binghamton University. She also sits on the UMIA and Blueprint 15 boards and has a six-year-old son. Caitlin Moriarty is the Director of Operations at the Tech Garden, aligning programs, resources, and events to help entrepreneurs reach their venture goals. She has been working at the Tech Garden for 4 years and has been an adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at SUNY Oswego for the last 2 years. Back in 2011, as a Syracuse University student, she was an entrepreneur in the Tech Garden's student sandbox. Please join me in welcoming Jen, Liza, and Caitlin.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I'll try to be as brief as possible so we can leave as much time for the other panelists in the and you're all questions, but I just wanted to thank Emily and Syracuse for inviting us to join you all this morning and present on some of the exciting things we're doing related to Syracuse Surge. So, you know, Syracuse Surge is really a rare opportunity that I think we have based on where we're at from a economic perspective, and a societal perspective globally. We all know Syracuse as the smart city, but we have aspirations to become a smarter city, really an example or an exemplar smart city in the world. And the Syracuse Surge is our strategy for inclusive growth in the new economy. So, you know, when we see all of the shifts that are happening in today's global economy, this move to what we know of as the fourth industrial revolution, which is really sparked and fueled by these rapidly emerging, highly connected technologies. We really see an enormous opportunity for Syracuse to actually capture growth with some of these industrial market and societal changes. Many folks on the call, you know, may be aware of some of the success that Syracuse had in some of our previous industrial changes. In fact, Syracuse as a city, you know, itself kind of grew out of the first industrial revolution. And that was really sparked by physical infrastructure, by the birth of the Erie Canal and all of the opportunity that that brought to industrial you know, companies and enterprises. And we really continued a fairly rapid growth during the second industrial revolution. We had a growing city from a population perspective. We had a growing economy. We had a growing middle class, which is actually really important to us when we look back and we think about the kind of economic opportunities we want to create for Syracuse today and for our region. And that middle class, you know, as the second industrial revolution was evolving, was a very diverse middle class. We had people of all backgrounds, of all races and nationalities, really participating in the growing manufacturing economy. We were a leader as a region in the early automotive industry, in certainly in the aircraft industry and sensors and some of those things, which really are such a unique part of our history and that we actually think become a differentiator for us moving forward. And I think each of us will kind of talk a little bit about those elements as we continue with this presentation. You know, unfortunately, I think where we lost some ground as a community was, you know, during the rise of the computer age in the last half of the 20th century. That's really where we didn't replace those manufacturing jobs with digitized jobs with companies that were really seeking opportunities in automation and some of those changes that were happening through, you know, the last part of the 20th century. And as a result, our population declined, you know, we saw rising poverty. And so we really missed those opportunities. But we have a whole new set of opportunities with the changes that are happening now. And we believe that the changes that are happening now really will allow us to kind of reset. And if we can really create opportunities for people in all of our neighborhoods, with all, you know, with all backgrounds, and really, you know, working with community partners like Syracuse and our other universities and colleges, you know, we can actually collectively succeed in the new economy. So that's kind of the backdrop for really for this discussion, but for our Syracuse Surge in particular. So we talk a lot about, you know, smart cities as a part of Syracuse Surge. And so I wanted to talk for a minute just about how we see the role of the smart city in this new emerging economy. And we really think about this as not just, you know, an opportunity for the city to embed more technology or to use technology better to provide, you know, the services that we provide as a city to our residents and our businesses. We're really trying to position Syracuse and Central New York to capture that value in a growing marketplace. You know, the smart city market is really considered an emerging industry in and of itself that didn't exist 10, 15 years ago. And when industry analysts look at it, they actually, you know, size that market at about $400 billion today. It's expected to double in the next 5 years globally. And so there is enormous market potential. And it means there's really a lot of opportunity for tech companies and entrepreneurs. And that's where our partners at the Tech Garden start to come in with Caitlin. But, you know, we have to do some things to enable this to happen here and to enable it to be sustainable here. And that includes really creating digital capabilities and infrastructure, really creating or kind of fostering the use cases and test sites to pilot some of this new technology. So we want to become a test bed city for these technologies, helping our business and our entrepreneurial companies to actually, you know, be successful, not just, you know, to allow their technology to be tested, but to give them the business tools for them to succeed and to market and commercialize their tech. And then, you know, probably most importantly, we need skilled tech talent here. That means making sure that as kids come up through the city school system, through our surrounding school systems in the county, that they have opportunities from a really early age to get exposed to these new technologies and to grow their capabilities. It means investing in additional opportunities for young adults outside of high school, whether they're in a formal college program or whether they're getting experience in the workplace or getting a certificate, that they have the digital skills needed for the jobs that are really emerging. And with that, I'll talk a little bit about some of the initiatives that we're really focused on from the from a Syracuse Surge perspective. So you can think of Syracuse Surge, you know, really, again, as an overarching strategy. And there are many projects and initiatives that are encompassed in that strategy, but it's really about focusing investments to support our growth. And we sort of think of it in terms of four main pillars or four main types of investments. So, you know, one is around digital infrastructure. We're doing a number of things related, as I alluded to on the previous slide, around workforce development and digital reskilling. A lot around innovation. And so we really want to create this Center City Innovation Hub, which I'll explain a little bit, and Caitlin, I think, will go into more detail about. And then really creating the smart city ecosystem and a data-rich environment where these applications, you know, really can be tested and scaled and then commercialized. So I'll talk just a moment about each of these, and then I'll turn it over to Caitlin. So in terms of digital infrastructure, some of you may have seen some news articles in the last year or two about some of the things we're doing in this area. And this is really one area in particular where the city is trying to take a leadership role in actually putting some resources behind digital infrastructure that hopefully can be leveraged by individual residents and businesses, but also shared for entrepreneurial experimentation. So we did make a really unique investment to basically buy back our streetlight network from National Grid, our utility here. That's actually a project. It was, you know, probably the first project that we announced as a part of Syracuse Surge back in 2019. The project actually completed in 2020. So all of our streetlights citywide have been converted to essentially LED technology, which the city now owns and manages. This is a major savings for the city. Just converting to LED lighting alone, I think, saves us about $3 million a year in operating costs. But what's really interesting about the lighting system is that it is a connected network that is able to transmit all kinds of data. So the lights themselves, you know, are basically tracked and monitored through this network. So the city has a dashboard, and we receive data every day about the working of the light of the lights themselves. So we know the moment a light goes out, which is something that never was the case before. So in the past, we'd have to kind of wait for a constituent to call us and say, "Hey, my light's out. Can you come fix it?" Now we know when that happens, we can deploy resources, you know, hopefully even before someone calls us to tell us that the light's out, you know, to go and fix that. And the city can do some interesting things with the light system and really experiment with, you know, dimming the lights, making the lights brighter when certain events happen, you know, maybe utilize the lighting system to help direct traffic around games at the Dome, which I know we're all excited for games at the Dome to really resume probably next year in the way that they had in the past. And so so we can do some really interesting things with that light system, but we're really excited about the potential that the system gives us to essentially hook in other sensors and devices around the city to collect other kinds of data and to transmit that information to us. As a part of that digital infrastructure, we are making investments as well, working in partnership with other companies and organizations in things like 5G, for example. So we are gonna be one of the first cities nationwide with a citywide 5G network in the next couple of years. And that will be, again, an opportunity for very high speed connectivity in the city. And we're working on other initiatives that are really aimed at closing the digital divide. You know, the digital divide is something that we were very concerned about before COVID-19. It was a major problem. It's been a problem for the last several years, but really it was felt so significantly during the pandemic when, you know, all of our kids had to start trying to learn from home, when so many workers needed to work from home. And if you don't have reliable high-speed internet access, it's very hard to do things like hold a meeting like this, for example. And so we're really working on those types of initiatives right now that are aimed at providing more opportunities for either free public Wi-Fi or very low cost solutions to connect more of our homes, more of our businesses, and things of that nature. So that's sort of what we've been focused on in the digital infrastructure space. From a workforce development perspective, you know, we are really focused on a couple of specific initiatives that I think are pretty exciting. One of which is a major 70 plus million dollar investment in creating a first of its kind science, technology, engineering, arts, and math high school right in the heart of Syracuse. So this of course will be the renovation of what was the Central Tech High School, which I'm sure some of you probably remember, but it's been, you know, vacant for 25 or 30 years. It's just south of downtown, and it's a beautiful historic building. But we're really excited about being able to, you know, reinvigorate that space, but really create the state-of-the-art learning opportunity for high school kids. And what makes this school very unique, or really the first of its kind in New York, is that it will be a school that is a part of the Syracuse City School District. It's going to be operated by the City of Syracuse School District, but it's actually going to admit students from all around the county. And so it's going to be a very mixed, immersive environment for students, about 60% of whom will reside in the city, but 40% will reside in the surrounding towns, you know, in the county. And we think, you know, that kind of diversity and that type of inclusive environment is going to be really critical and important, you know, to create a workforce that comes out of this high school that's really capable in many cases of going right into some of these tech jobs. And I'm sure Liza can talk more about some of the work that they're doing through some of the other initiatives to create different pathways to these emerging tech jobs. But the STEAM school potentially becomes a very specific direct pathway into those jobs. We're of course working with other partners, whether it's Lemoyne College, for example, with its Erie 21 initiative, or SUNY EOC, which obviously focuses on more of the adult learner and kind of post-high school workforce to make sure that they've got programs that are really designed to focus on digital skills. And so happy to talk more about workforce development stuff, but it's a really critical pillar among these four things that we're focused on. I won't spend too much time talking about the Innovation Hub. I think the Tech Garden and some of the work we're trying to do around high-tech entrepreneurs is really something that Caitlin's going to, I think, spend a bit of time talking about. But it is a really key part of this approach, where we want to see more homegrown tech startups. We want to see more entrepreneurs, maybe folks that go to the STEAM school that have a cool idea for how to use some of this new tech, or someone out there in the community that really wants to create a new business. That ability to generate innovation locally and to seed it locally and to keep it local is really important. And, you know, finally, this idea of creating a smart city ecosystem, it's really about utilizing, you know, those other three things: the infrastructure, our workforce, and our innovation hub, to really, you know, seed pilots, identify, you know, ideas for how to utilize some of this tech, and actually test it and deploy it in our live environment. This is about Syracuse and you know, Central New York becoming a test bed for these technologies, and for us enabling these companies to and entrepreneurs to test their ideas, and ideally to commercialize them and be able to scale them outside of our region even. So I didn't want to spend too much time. That was a really quick overview, lots of information, certainly happy to answer more questions as we go through, but we're really excited about all of this opportunity and really excited to share more of it with all of you and hear your questions and get you engaged. So with that, I'll turn it over to Caitlin, who's gonna spend a little bit more time talking about the Tech Garden and our Innovation Hub.
So thanks everybody, good morning. Just to echo Jen, thank you Syracuse University for having us. And as you heard in Emily's introduction, I give Syracuse University the credit for me being here at all. Not only did they introduce me to the Tech Garden, but I fell in love with this entrepreneurship ecosystem, and it is the reason I came back. I'm not from Central New York originally, but I very intentionally made it my home. So I'm here today, as Jen mentioned, to talk to you about the Tech Garden, and we are Central New York's premier technology incubator. And what we do is we're serving those founders who are creating those new technologies, or they're leveraging existing technologies in innovative ways. And the way that we're helping them achieve those venture goals is through programs, resources, events, and access to this ecosystem that we're building. And as Jen mentioned, there are some wonderful partners in this ecosystem that are supporting entrepreneurs. And what we've done over the last 4 to 5 years in particular is made our core competency around high growth potential technology companies. And a great example of this working across upstate New York, I'm sure some of you have heard of our ACV auctions who just went public out in Buffalo, and that being a really big deal for a win for upstate New York. And it's that level of scale that, you know, we're hoping to get here at the Tech Garden as well. Just for a little bit of background, for those who are less familiar, we made a pretty mediocre parking garage that collapsed. And we hope to make a much more successful business incubator. And we opened our doors back in 2004 through the help of a lot of wonderful partners. And over those last 15 years, we're seeing about 26 new members on average. We have 107 startups in our membership today. But over the time, we've served about 500 entrepreneurs coming in and out of our building. And over those last 15 years, we've also seen a steady increase, not only in the number of applications, but in the spectrum of tech industries that, you know, are coming through that are looking for that assistance. And obviously just a higher caliber of startup. And through some of our programming, we're seeing not only a local attention, but national and global attention as well. So we can say we have startups from about 6 different countries, particularly through our Genius New York program. So speaking of Genius New York, one of the programs, resources, and events we offer is this funding program. So for those who are familiar with this kind of chain of investment that startups have to go through, typically starting with friends and family, there's a pre-seed, a seed round, and then there's a series A, B, C, et cetera, particularly for high growth startups. And for anybody who's tried to start a company, they know that this friends and family pre-seed and seed round are damn near impossible to finance. So that's a huge gap in what startups are able to find before getting investor ready. So the Tech Garden has taken on a bit of that role to be an early stage investor in these companies to try and get them the strategic injections of capital they need to actually get investor ready. So at a high level, here's a couple of our programs that we're able to do that through. So our Grants for Growth program, our Clean Tech Center program, and our Genius New York program, where you can see overall, we've contributed about over $16 million to close to 100 startups in that time. As a quick snapshot, in our 2020 impact data report, so we collect impact data on an annual basis from our membership, the 101 members who did respond, we saw in 2020, no less, 416 new jobs created, $100 million in investment funds received, over $54 million in annual revenue. A lot of our members choose not to share their revenue numbers, which we completely understand. And then spending about $23 million in capital expenditures in our community. And again, the most exciting number is the 624 anticipated new jobs coming in the future. So year over year, we're trying to track, you know, where are we? And hopefully, obviously, these numbers continue to grow. So at this highest level here, as we continue to serve these startups, We're creating these local jobs. And again, Liza will be talking about how do we make sure that our local community has pathways to access these great local jobs. We're creating new innovations, right? We're developing these new technologies. And over time, as they graduate and they outgrow our services, a lot of them are choosing to intentionally stay here. And funny enough, we've seen this organic corridor, we call it our tech corridor, along Warren Street, where we see a lot of our, you know, most well-known alumni kind of continuing to stay downtown, and they continue to stay in touch with each other. So would love to keep that going as well. So in addition, a lot of you have probably heard, in conjunction with Syracuse Surge, we are expanding. So we currently have about 33,000 square feet in our facility. 23,000 of that is available for lease for our entrepreneurs. And with this expansion, hoping to add an additional two floors, we're looking at about a 79,000 square foot facility with over 55,000 square feet available for lease. So over double our capacity. So we're hoping to be done by fall of 2022. And I'll just share these renderings. I know you've seen them around. These are just initial renderings. So this is not to say this is what it will look like by any means. We are just starting the process of getting designers in to gather requirements. But the overall idea here is some of the things that we want to incorporate. As I mentioned, two additional floors. We want to open up a lot of glass, right? We want to be in this conference district between the Syracuse Marriott and the On Center, the War Memorial, the Steam School very nearby. As people walk by, we want to make it a much more walker-friendly environment. So you can peek in, you can see what these entrepreneurs are doing. Having these giant screens to be able to really announce what's going on. I know for some of you who've ever walked by the Tech Garden, you may not be sure at all what it is or what's going on in there. So we really want to establish a presence in this conference district. So again, here's our plaza. You can see the Syracuse Marriott right in front of us. And you can also see that door, that big 235. Right now, our address is 235 Harrison Street, but there we do not have our front entrance on Harrison Street, which causes immense confusion. So again, trying to solve some issues and again, establish that presence. And last but not least, before I hand it over to Liza, as Jen said, while Syracuse Surge is this larger umbrella, the Tech Garden is part of supporting a variety of complementary initiatives to ensure that Syracuse Surge is successful. And at this highest level, you know, we already are talking about Syracuse Surge being the Center City Innovation Hub, preparing for this fourth industrial revolution, and really making sure that we're able to leverage these investments in the smart streetlights, in the STEAM school successfully. So having the entrepreneurs come in, how do we leverage these these smart streetlights in an innovative way? Can we commercialize it in some way? In addition to that, some of the things we're doing around JPMC Advancing Cities, as these opportunities become available, as we continue to succeed, knock on wood, we really wanna make sure that this growth and success is inclusive. So we are investing in data over the last year. We're tracking our XBEs, and that is our women, minority, veteran, and otherwise able-owned entrepreneurs, and making sure that all of our programs, resources, and events, our environment is welcoming to all types of entrepreneurs. So we are engaging with our anchor institutions, activating community support, and really finding out different ways and methodologies to be a much more diverse incubator, a much more welcoming incubator. And then of course, as Jen brought up as well, the Smart Cities Initiative leaves a lot of opportunity for us to create partnerships with organizations like Microsoft, as you know, are establishing a hub here in the Northeast. They're gonna be great partners to us as we continue to develop new technologies. We already have some of our members accessing Microsoft Azure credits, which is wonderful. So they're gonna be a great partner to help round out all of the things that we're trying to accomplish. And before I hand it over to Liza, like we said, the largest majority is we're creating these modern tech jobs. So we have electronics, radar, AI, machine learning, programming, gamers, a lot of emphasis on unmanned aerial systems, big data, Internet of Things. So we really want to make sure that as we create these tech jobs, particularly for our college students, they can make sure they know they can stay here, that there are opportunities to stay here. The second is going to be the growth type company jobs. So as we mentioned, by focusing on high growth potential tech companies, these aren't just 5 or 10 really great jobs. This is scaling at a rate where there's hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs that become available from a highly successful, high growth startup. So from our perspective, that also means that we need to make sure Central New York is viewed as credible by outside investors, which is something that we're working on, because this growth for a high growth startup is fueled by investors. So typically the revenue of a high growth startup can't support such a rapid growth. So they always usually depend on outside investment. And then last but not least is employment and those entrepreneurial opportunities for our students coming out of that STEAM school, which is very much top of mind for us. So we're excited to do that. And with that, I will hand it over to Liza to make sure we know how our wonderful community are accessing these new jobs.
Good morning, everyone. Loved seeing a few familiar faces. So hello to everyone that I know on this call and those who I don't know. Happy to be here with you all. Thank you, SU. Thank you, JPMC Advancing Cities, for funding the work that we're doing. This is a very high level, quick snapshot of surge workforce and what employers are looking for and what we're seeing as occupations, as we define them as tech. We have over 25 employers that are engaged in and are committed to hiring diverse talent. When I say diverse, I'm talking about different backgrounds, race, gender, culture, I mean, you name it, education. They're looking for a diversity of professionals. And the top employment occupations that we're seeing are software developer, IT specialist, data analyst, and I did put another one, but I guess it didn't update, digital customer service. With the pandemic, you know, everything is online. Customer service, you would usually go to a place to get that. Now everything is through the computer and through the phone. And employers say that they're looking for people that, again, are diverse professionals, have grit, can learn, can continue to learn, and are innovators. Right there, you see that that list does not have any skills. These are attributes that people come with. And if we can go to the next slide, how do we connect our community to these opportunities? And how do we hold employers accountable to that? And also, there are many openings in these occupations. They all label them differently, like full stack developer or backend developer. They all have a foundation that leads to like a software developer, but they are all called different things. And the way we're going about this is we've created a, right now is digital. It is a table of employers, our support partners, which I know some of y'all are on this call. So shout outs to you all. The support partners are our task force. That includes Student EOC. That includes On Point for College, Say Yes, Mercy Works, ERIE 21, which Jen mentioned, the Syracuse School District. And I'm missing probably one or two. And then we have CenterSig. We convene this group and we really listen to employers about their difficulties of attracting and recruiting diverse professionals. When we have these meetings, our support partners are in listening mode because they have the network that we're trying to connect to. So really businesses lead their priorities and the actions to drive results. Again, our public partners and support partners and training partners, they play a supportive role and bring the resources and the network. And I think the beautiful thing about this is we're talking about commitment to hiring diverse professionals. And I think it's not easy to do, but I think it's one of the things that's easier to do. And the reason why I say that is because I've been able to get resumes and we've built a reputation that if I send someone over to you employers, you give them a call and you interview them. One of the things that I'm really focused on is that diversity and inclusion, right? Once someone comes to your company, are they included? Are they heard? Do they feel welcomed? Retention, we're talking about retention here. Because if none of those things are happening, they're gonna leave. And it's, again, it's easy for me to send a resume and for them to interview them. So we're working really hard as one of our strategies to focus on racial equity and social impact with our employers. We're actually saying, in order for you to work with us, you have to go through this one-on-one training. That we have to get your hearts and minds ready for you to receive diverse professionals. And I like to use a framework called TARA: training, attraction, retention, and advancement. It's the easiest way that I can break it down because there is so much happening, like Jen Tift mentioned. So in the training, we understand, and I hope I can get to some of the questions that are in the chat. In the training pillar, we understand that our community are at different levels, right? Skills level. There is a skills gap, there is a digital divide, and we understand that. And it is the reason why we have so many partners as task force members, because they work with the different communities. Someone mentioned, if I'm a 17-year-old and my life has been tough, we're working with the Syracuse School District to start that pathway way before they graduate high school. We're talking, if we can get down to elementary school, we're talking middle school, high school, they have a lot of CTE programs. How do we get them when they're young? To teach them attributes, customer service, life skills, so that when they graduate, job shadowing, really showing the opportunities here in Syracuse. You don't have to work retail, although I came from retail and it was a great experience, but there are other opportunities here in Syracuse. Another example I would give you with that is that we're hosting what we're calling career connections. And we're bringing employers that are part of this industry partnership to present the opportunities available straight out of high school. And we're presenting that to high school students that are graduating this upcoming June, as well as their guardians and their parents. We don't want to leave them behind either. So with that, you know, straight out of high school, you can go into a great job at TCG Player, Rapid Response, et cetera. But what happens after that, right? How do we build relationships that if they are having a bad day, they can call their coach, their mentor, hey, my manager pissed me off. I know you taught me all these things, but at the moment I didn't know what to do. I just stepped back. Because we understand that when you're in that moment, it's something different. You can tell me, you can train me all you want, but if when you're in that moment, everything goes away. So how do we create, I always say every meeting, it's about building relationships. It's about connections. And another thing that I will mention is that there are opportunities straight out of high school. I mentioned software developer, I mentioned IT, and these other occupations. Employers aren't requiring a bachelor's degree. They're literally saying, if you can get them here, and these are larger companies, usually small organizations that come out of the tech garden, like True Weather is at the industry partnership, SpinCar is there as well. Some smaller organizations won't have the bandwidth for the training in order to train them. But there are other organizations that if they show up on time and they're committed and they have grit, we will hire them and we will teach them. But for those other organizations that or companies that don't have that, we have multiple trainings. We work with SUNY EOC that has a customer service training. We are also doing a lot of research on apprenticeships. Overseas apprenticeships is like a four-year degree. And then here, I don't know the reputation here, but it's not the same. So we're trying to do a lot of research and see what model we can bring out here so we can put people through an apprenticeship with our companies here. So again, different levels of trainings, understanding that there is a pathway there. Wherever people come in at, we want to pick them up and we want to be able to say, okay, you're in the search ecosystem. I know who you can talk to. I know where you can go. Let's plan this together. We're here to support you. So that all around support. And the attraction, and Emily, you're going to have to stop me because I can talk to this group for a while. So just give me a hands up or a stop, whatever. For attraction, we have a few different strategies. We have the Tech and Culture Network, where it's a network of diverse professionals. And if you've been to the speaker series, Tech and Culture, we usually highlight and bring amazing professionals to talk about their journey in tech. And again, tech can mean so many things. So if you haven't come to one of those events, I encourage you to. You can go to the Center State CEO website and find out when the next one is. So we have the Tech and Culture Network, which is a cohort of people that, again, are diverse, are looking for tech opportunities, are looking for people, are looking to build that community. And at the same time, we have employers sponsoring events. Employers can come meet with these professionals and attract them to their company. Another strategy that we're working on is, I don't know if any of you have heard of the Good Life CNY website. So that strategy is, again, we're diversifying everything we do at different levels. So attracting diverse professionals from outside of our region to come to Syracuse. And with that, we are kicking off a group of employers that are wanting to invest to bring people here to Syracuse. We're all here, I suppose, on this call, live in Syracuse or love Syracuse. And we know that it's a great place to live, work, and actually raise a family. And it's why I chose Syracuse. I have a six-year-old. With the retention and advancement, again, I'll just mention that we're doing a lot of RESI work, which is the racial equity and social impact with Dr. Johanna Rogers and our employers. And again, that career advancement, once we get someone in the door, what's next, right? Who is advancing? Who's not advancing? Why? Are there support systems? Are there not? Does the company not have an easy way for an employee to say, all right, I'm ready to be customer service rep two. What do I do? So again, different strategies. Our strategies are very diverse because our community is very diverse. So happy to answer any questions. I'll stop here. I know we're probably over time. Thank you.
Great, thank you so much. So now we'll open it up for questions. So there are a couple questions that have come through, so we'll start with those. So I think this question is for Jen. Will the digital infrastructure improvements end with the city lights?
So I think that's a little bit of a different question than what I'm reading. So I just want to clarify. So the way I read this question, I think it's asking if there's going to be digital infrastructure improvements outside of the city boundaries. So the city lines, not lights, but is that right, Eric?
Yeah, good call. You read it right.
So the short answer is no, they will not end at the city line or boundaries. The city of Syracuse, obviously, we're focused on investments in the city of Syracuse, and so my focus is on truly city infrastructure. But we know, people don't just stay inside the city. We all permeate these artificial boundaries all the time. And so so really people are going to be moving between the city, the suburbs, other areas. The county I know is very focused on, in particular, digital connectivity in rural areas. We know across the country that's a huge problem. They will be implementing initiatives as well that are really geared toward creating more connectivity opportunities outside of the city of Syracuse, but of course the things that I can control, that we can control in the city, are certainly more focused inside the city.
Great, thank you, and thank you for catching that. So next question, I'm just going to stick with the streetlights. Can these smart streetlights be used for facial recognition?
No. So the streetlights, the lighting technology itself is primarily that it's lighting technology. So they have embedded sensors within them that send us signals when the lights aren't working properly, but we'd have to connect a camera, for example, into the system to, you know, to recognize images, which there are no cameras attached to our streetlights.
Great, thank you. We're going to shift gears a little bit, talking about education. So how do we protect the opportunity for the poor students to get the proper education, so then after high school, they can go on to these jobs, like Liza, you were talking about?
I'll start and then you can definitely chime in. You know, it's such an important question. And I'll just say, you know, some of the new initiatives that we've identified that are really, you know, kind of signature initiatives that are part of this surge, you know, they're not the only things that we're doing. And really, this all integrates into a much larger set of investments and approaches that we've been, you know, really working on for years now. So, you know, our hope is that any kid, especially, again, speaking from the city's perspective in the city of Syracuse School District, is going to be equipped to, you know, be successful in a job, you know, coming out of school, whether they go to the STEAM school or whether they don't go to the STEAM school. So, you know, of course, the STEAM school is only going to be able to admit a certain number of kids, but we have an amazing CTE program that has been developed over the years, which, you know, many kids today get great benefit from. We have a number of other initiatives that are really targeted at introducing, you know, kids at a, you know, even before the high school age to new technology. And, you know, the one thing the pandemic honestly has done it is it's really required, you know, almost all households to get more familiar with using technology, to be connected, to learn in a connected way, and those types of things. And so we've seen a rise in providing devices to households, providing Wi-Fi hotspots to households through the schools. Those are all really important efforts that I think, you know, certainly need to and will continue even beyond the pandemic, because really those are giving kids and their extended households, because we know they, you know, they share the Wi-Fi hotspots, they share the devices. All the family members get on these things. What we're learning during this experience in the pandemic, it's giving those families opportunities that they didn't have, which come from more connectivity. So we need to make sure everything we're doing from a surge perspective is, you know, integrated and leveraging all of those other things, so that we're creating as much opportunity as we can for kids, you know, regardless of whether they're, you know, they get to go to the STEAM school, they don't go to the STEAM school. And we think this network or this patchwork of programming will create a lot more opportunity in our community than has historically existed. That's kind of the philosophy, if you will.
And I'll just add that, so the Syracuse School District, they're an education institution. And as Center State CEO, we're working really hard to bridge in the gap between employers, our teachers understanding what opportunities are available, our students, I mentioned the Career Connections event, understanding the opportunities available, and employers are really wanting to go into the school district, provide job shadowing, highlight their company, their occupations, and really connect with the Syracuse School District students. So that's just what I wanted to add, that, you know, from the employer perspective, we're trying to bridge that gap, because a lot of the times teachers don't know the opportunities available out here in Syracuse, which there are a lot. So how do we educate and raise awareness of, you know, straight out of high school, you can do X, Y, Z. And you've actually been developing a relationship with them through a mentorship program or et cetera. So that's from my point of view.
Great, thank you so much. Next question is kind of similar. So Jen, you briefly mentioned credentials in your presentation. Liza, you talked up in demand occupations associated with apprenticeships. Is there a centralized place for learners and workers to view, like, the Syracuse Surge pathways, anticipated earnings, annual openings, to what, typical education needed, that kind of thing?
That, Nicole, that's my friend. That is a great question that we are working on having a one place for everything surge that's happening. We're not quite there yet. Jen, I don't know if you want to add to that, but it is something that we are intentionally working on. I think with COVID, everything shifted with as far as like programming, training, that we had a pivot as well. And that is becoming a priority again to have that one place so people can learn, opt in, sign up, and get the support and whatever they want from Surge.
Yeah, I would just add that, you know, that one stop shop or that kind of single resource is so important, you know, and these things will vary still by, you know, by industry, by sector, you know, by specific employer in terms of, you know, what folks really are looking for, you know, with some of these newer emerging jobs. So it's going to be important for us, and whether it's through that Good Life website that Liza mentioned, or other resources, I think we do need to kind of get the word out and continue to try to reach as many people as possible so they understand truly the nature of these opportunities. You know, I think another really important thing that, again, we're starting to do now, I think we need to continue to do and to build more of, is connections into existing community organizations that do a lot of work with, you know, communities on a neighborhood basis, for example, or that really target specific demographics within the community. You know, there have been awesome programs going on at Good Life Youth Foundation, at the YWCA, at, you know, all of our amazing community organizations, and you know, many programs existed previously to, you know, help people with digital skills. You know, we're trying to create connectivity between all of those programs, because each of those organizations kind of has their own networks. They have families and communities that they frequently communicate with, and they're trusted. They're trusted resources for our community. And so we want to make sure they have all the information about the employment opportunities we're trying to create here, the skilling opportunities we're trying to create here, so that they can direct the families and the communities that they work with to access all these opportunities. But we have to create truly an integrated network that starts to connect some of these things that, you know, I think historically have just kind of existed in silos.
That's a key thing in the work that we're doing, collaboration. Because if anyone enters at the Tech Garden, or I don't know, meets Jen knows exactly where they can point them to and they can get that support.
Great, thank you so much. I think we've got time for one more question, and it's not an easy question. So this is really for all three of you. Can you talk about how to get employers to face up to the embedded conscious and unconscious bias? It's not all about making the prospective employees better. It's really talking with those employers and making sure that they're getting called out for it and being better themselves.
I can take that. Dr. Johanna Rogers is doing a lot of great work with her portfolio as the VP of Racial Equity and Social Impact at Center State. So she's been working with a lot of employers on just that. Also for workforce, we have a minimum criteria of the things that you have to offer. So we call it job quality or workplace competitiveness. In order for me to feel okay to send someone over to you, we usually have one-on-one meetings. Before COVID, we would go in and see how the space and the environment was. That hasn't happened because of COVID, but there are some minimum criterias that we look for in order to do a training for a specific employer or multiple employers, send resumes to, etc. So those are some of the ways.
Just a shout out as well to add on to that. A lot of it is, you know, I'm from New Jersey, so it's a lot about calling a spade, right? You can't get better unless you're looking at it in the face. I'll just speak from a Tech Garden perspective. in the high growth tech space. You know, we are largely predominantly male. We are predominantly white. All of our investments predominantly goes to those white males. That's not some, I didn't personally create this situation, but I can certainly look at it in the face and be part of that solution. So the same way that we want to create a welcoming environment, a safe space, creating that same safe space, which Johanna is doing, creating a safe space for employers to say, you're right, like I didn't necessarily create this, but I am unconsciously part of this issue and I can actively be part of a solution. So creating that safety and having those conversations, I think, is wildly important.
And I know we're over time, but I'll just close out by sort of saying, you know, I think it's such a critical, you know, goal for us to acknowledge this, you know, emphasis on creating truly a more inclusive, welcoming community. I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. So from, you know, our administration's perspective, the surge is an initiative that's very focused on, you know, economic development, but it fits within a much broader set of initiatives and goals that we have, you know, which are much more about the community that we're trying to build and create. And I think, you know, what we've seen in the last year, which has been riddled with this horrible healthcare crisis, but also riddled with, you know, just enormous displays of racial inequity and the community really, frankly, rising up to say enough is enough. You know, we need to make sure all of these things are integrated, that they're all pointing in the same direction, and that we have very high standards that we apply across the board. And so, you know, we're very committed to making sure that the work that we're doing around police reform, that the work that we're doing around, you know, some of these other really important quality of life issues in the city is tied into Syracuse Surge. It's all strategically aligned, you know, because people's work life and home life are so integrated, and because we are really trying to, at the end of the day, create a better community. It's not just about, you know, jobs and economic growth, although that's what we were focused on talking about today. It's really about the kind of community we want to have. So, you know, I thank you all for your time today, and thanks for that question. And I think we need to work together on it. You know, it's a huge problem, and it honestly takes all of us coming together, holding each other accountable, and setting standards that we believe are important for our community.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So unfortunately, we are out of time. So please join me in virtually thanking our panelists, Jen, Liza, and Caitlin. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all. Have a great day.